AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
On Pilot TV this week, we are spending time with Alexander Skarsgård's homicidal mechanoid in Murderbot on Apple TV+, embracing the satanic panic of the 80s in Hysteria on Paramount+, and playing golf with a serial killer in The Game on Channel 5. Plus, Russell T. Davis, the notorious RTD, joins us on the show for an in-depth Doctor Who chat with Boydie. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to Pilot TV, your essential guide to every show that matters, and a podcast that will be extremely nice to Boyd today. And in no way mention the words football or drubbing. Now,
drubbing.
All I'd like to say is a little card written in blood was on this desk when it came in, and it simply said, Joe Barton sends his regards. But despite a load of drama that you can doubtless hear all about on Boydie's Arsenal podcast, I am joined by venerable critic, venereal critic, Boyd Hilton, and massive Q&A hole, Kay Ribeiro.
You're lucky we've got a bit of space between us.
It's
there,
true.
James.
I'm very aware of that.
A couple of screens
fact.
Between us that will keep you safe.
Yeah. How are we both? I mean, sorry, I know how Boyd is. How are you, Kay? Mm.
I'm better than Boydo, but yeah, I was monitoring the situation last night. That is how tense I become.
I only know, by the way, how this happened because I recorded the Andor spoiler special with Sophie Petzl, and she felt how you feel.
Yeah.
So I understand the pain.
Yeah. Sophie, another. Podcast I was invited on. Sophie is an absolute Arsenal devotee. One of the great things about her, and yeah, she'll be feeling it. Joe Barton really annoyed me actually because almost as soon as the game had finished last night, we're recording this on Thursday, by the way. His shoddy team plays tonight. Bodo Glimt. He posted this thing on Instagram, which is a picture of the Champions League, the cup, the trophy, which you'd win if you'd won it. And he wrote on it, "Winners!" exclamation mark. That time, Declan Rice scored 2 free kicks, which is taking the piss out of the fact that in an earlier round, he scored 2 incredible free kicks in the same game. It was one of the most historic moments.
You spoke about it on here.
Yeah, I spoke about it on here. And I'm like, look, Spurs are playing Bodo Glimt, as I may have mentioned.
A team that you've made up.
Who are a shoddy Norwegian team tonight, who they may or may not go through. Then they face shoddy Man United. Maybe they'll go through to the final of the shoddy competition. But then no Spurs fan can possibly pick up Arsenal on any level. Like assuming of any level of inferiority, Arsenal have any level of inferiority to Spurs, because in every single way, we are better than that. Anyway.
Can I just say,
thanks,
I think,
Joe, for winding him up.
Yeah, I think this feud needs to go up a notch. So, Joe, I'm going to lay a challenge to you now. I want you, working as I'm sure you are on the second season of Black Doves, to work in some kind of Boydie Arsenal dig into the screenplay for an episode of Black Doves.
Oh, I mean, he'll do that anyway. Not a dig at me. He'll do
wasn't
a dig at Arsenal.
Spurs fan in the first series, I thought.
Yeah, he always mentions football stuff in his quite rightly, in his, as I would do if I was a leading award-winning screenwriter. Yeah, so I'm fine. I've covered.
You're good. You're fine. You've coped. So other than football, what have you been watching?
Well, why are we whispering?
I don't know, but it's creepy.
It's a bit ASMR.
Yeah, it'll go down. Okay, well, I've been watching more of The Four Seasons, which we reviewed a couple of weeks ago. Kay's nodding. That's a good sign.
Finished it.
Yeah. Did you?
Yeah.
Wow. See?
Jesus.
That's how good it is.
I mean, is it though?
Yes,
it's enjoyable,
this is one of the many, many things you're wrong about.
Oh, I see.
Add it to the list.
Yeah, add it to the list. It's really, really good. I actually think it gets better and better as it goes on, because you get to know the characters more, and things happen that they're, you know, that you're not expecting, and that's more powerful and effective when you know the characters and they do unexpected things. But it's just got, it's been compared to The White Lotus.
Oh my God!
Oh really? I don't know if I agree with that.
Oh my God!
I think that's a bit cuckoo.
To be fair, but I've seen that in a couple of reviews.
It's enjoyable though. It's enjoyable to be in their company.
You know, the lazier TV critics, if they see a show built around a similar thing, which is basically, I think what they're referring to there is that adults, loquacious, witty adults talking to each other in glamorous, beautiful settings is a bit like The White Lotus. Mm. So, you know, whereas actually, when it comes down to it, the tone of this show is not really like The White Lotus at all, is it? Particularly the tone. Mm. You can see, like, ostensibly, you know, the fact that there's nice, beautiful settings and they go on vacation and they chat to each other about relationships and stuff, that is what happens in The White Lotus. But that's it. The rest of it, tonally and in terms of the performances and etc., it's very different. This is more of a kind of... It's kind of like a gentle comedy, but with a quite harsh undercurrent. Do you know what I mean? Like an unflinching undercurrent about long-term relationships and people in their 50s.
And midlife, yeah, exactly.
Midlife crises, that kind of thing. And it deals with them with a lightness of touch, which is almost misleading because it's actually really, really smart and clever and funny.
They do hide that very well, to be fair.
You're so wrong about it. I think you'd enjoy it if you watch more. I do. So anyway, I think it's great. I'm going to go.
I'm interested to know, like, because I've watched it to the end, but I haven't seen the film it's based on. And there's something that happens in the last episode, and I wondered if... I mean, actually, I can't even talk about it because it's going to be a spoiler, but...
I haven't watched the last episode yet. So
you could spoil it for Boydie.
I've got two episodes to go. So, yeah, okay.
We'll discuss it off pod once you finish.
That'll be intriguing, yeah. Anyway, it's just really, really good. And... I'm enjoying it fantastically well. Oh, yeah, and then there's one of the lovely moments that was in episode two, and this is a slight spoiler, because previewers were told not to mention this when they were writing the pews of the show, but I've subsequently, since people have reviewed the show, and it's been out now for, like a week, I think, at least.
Are people going to hate you for saying this?
No, I don't think so. It's such a...
Hang on, what are you going to do?
Well, you can take
he just doesn't care.
I'm giving you the chance to fast forward by
Maverick
about that
Boydie,
minute.
He's on
it's
it again.
It's just a lovely moment. It's not,
Is that Boydie is about to drop a massive four season spoiler. You have been warned. Just going to put that out there.
And also, just to say, it's not about his hotel stay. Yeah. We're talking about the show.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, go on.
All it is in episode two, up pops Alan Alda himself, the writer, director, creator.
Yeah, all right,
of the original film. Alan Alda, now 89, by the way, 89 glorious years old. And it's just a lovely little tribute to him.
I've interviewed him. For the West Wing.
For the West Wing, of course, yeah. I mean, I love Alan Alda so much. He's absolutely, I love him.
He's a legend.
He's a legend, thank you. So it's great to see him pop up in the show itself. Yes, that's all I was going to say.
Best thing about the show. Anyway.
I haven't finished yet. Hold your horses. I only just got started, mate.
Sorry. Sorry, mate.
Yeah, mate.
Mention of football.
Exactly.
Lads are in.
Exactly.
lads
with a Z. I wanted to mention a new... Do you remember a couple of... We were talking about... Well, me and Kay, you weren't. Talking about Last One Laughing.
Yes.
Which was the kind of competition between... comedians to make each other laugh and just not laugh. Which was so good. It became a little cult hit for Prime Video and was really, really good. Hosted by Jimmy Carr, etc. Now, there's a very similar format that's just started on You and Dave this week, which is called Silence is Golden, hosted by Dermot O'Leary and created by Richard Bacon. And in this, it's all about an audience of like 80 people are told they've got £250,000 to start with. They've won that already. But in the following subsequent hour, they have to make sure they don't make any kind of noise, no matter what happens in front of them in the studio. And if none of them make any noise, they have to keep the £250,000. But in fact, what happens is, comedians do stints. There's a elderly naked woman roams among the audience at one point. Yes. There's like what's the word?
James suddenly decides he's going to tune in.
Yes, I do so love the elderly naked people.
Yeah. There's a knife thrower that doesn't his act. So there's all these kind of, and Dermot cunningly tries to get like, says to the audience, look, if you want to win this new mobile phone or have this weekend away, we'll give it to you now. You just have to say something and betray the rest of the audience. Because every time a noise is made, they lose $5,000 or $10,000, depending on the severity.
Oh, so it's the audience as a collective rather than individual members.
So what's really interesting about it...
I think that's the most fun element of it.
Have you watched it?
Yes.
There you go. Have I just said all the things that I'm watching, the same as things you're watching this week?
Well, if we were watching together in your palatial mansion, then yes.
Yeah.
No, I have watched it as well. And I think what I would say is it's not as laugh out loud funny as last Last one standing. But because it, I think it suffers a little bit from the fact that because they have to stay silent, there's not much atmosphere in the room.
Yeah, it's part of the weirdness of it.
It's quite surreal in that way. But I do think the audience turning on themselves.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Because some people are just happy to pipe up to get the prize.
Yeah, there's a guy called Will in the first episode who cannot stop himself from laughing or saying.
I mean, what is he on? Oh, he's like,
I think he's just a normal person, but the rest of the audience are furious with him as they can see.
James, you would be angry at him. Even I was getting a bit frustrated because, like, someone would come on stage and just say their name and he'd start giggling. And I was like, okay, that's not funny.
I think I'd be quite good on this show.
Yeah, I think you would 100%
right.
Yeah, you'd just sit there with your smug face.
My smug face and just not move, like, you know.
Although exactly. I think if it came to, oh, you could win and then choose a prize that he would like, he might pipe up.
Oh, but betray the whole audience.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, exactly. Mm.
Anyway, so it makes for a very intriguing watch, and I was very entertained by that. Still haven't finished yet. We've got the next week, the Doctor Who that went out on Saturday. I'm mentioning my weekly Doctor Who slot. Most recent episode is The Story in the Engine, which went out on Saturday. It's another excellent episode. I'm not just saying this. I do think this series, in fact, I talked to him about this, that for me, this series is even more full of impressive episodes that are ambitious and bold, use the B word, than the first season under the Disney Plus deal, if you like. In this one, the Doctor and Belinda go to Lagos in 2019. You know, we had lots of shows set in recent, with another one here, which is not set in the present day for some reason. It's set in 2019, I think. And they end up in this barber shop where a very mysterious barber is all about telling stories and getting credit for creative work or thoughts or philosophical thoughts. There's a lot of interesting themes and ideas in this one, as there have been in most of the episodes. But it's another episode that I absolutely loved. It was written by Inua Elams, and I think that's his first. He's a playwright and poet, etc. I think this is definitely his first episode of Doctor Who. And that is an example of how Russell has brilliantly tapped into lots of different directors and writers and given them a chance to write for Doctor Who in a rather brilliant way. So that was very exciting. And finally, I was going to mention the BAFTAs. So by the time this goes out on Monday, Kay and I would have been to the BAFTA TV Awards, won't we, Kay?
Yes. It's very thrilling for me. I've never been.
Just put it out there.
Yeah.
So is this happening? Because you are a BAFTA, aren't you, Boydie?
So
are you because you are a BAFTA?
Yeah.
Are you going as a BAFTA and Kay is your guest?
No.
Or is Kay invited independently?
Kay, we were both on the jury. We can say this now because
this means you get free tickets to the event.
Not everyone does for enough, but thankfully because they realise how important Kay and I are to the whole running of BAFTA.
Yeah.
They invited us. So yeah, it's very exciting.
And obviously myself not being invited to either be a judge or to attend.
What you need to do is you need to be on the list to get to be a judge first on the jury. Then you may well be invited. Yeah, although they can't invite every single juror because there's about like hundreds of them, and they have to fit all the nominees into the festival as well. But we're lucky enough to be among that number in the
it's fine.
The only category
I'm not bitter
voted
at all.
For by members of the public. So by Monday we'll know who the big winners are and whether Gavin Stacey in particular won the audience award, as the bloody should do, hopefully.
I'm excited. Have you got your tux ready, Boyd?
I put my suit in the cleaners, yes.
Okay, fine.
I wouldn't call it a tux. I would never wear a tux.
Boyd, he doesn't tux.
He doesn't tux.
Tux is these days. I mean, as someone, I'm sure you watched the Met Gala.
You're going to dress like Coleman Domingo?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, he's my star
group. Yeah, you can pull that off.
Yeah, Coleman Domingo from the Four Seasons, of course.
Which of is course, very good. Yeah.
Absolutely hilarious outfit. So I might be inspired. Did you see?
I'd love that.
One person arrived in like a kind of hidden box kind of thing with like curtains on it. I was like,
really?
I only saw the video briefly. I never found out who it was, but I was like, this is evil. You know, there's a film where they take the piss out of those. I can't remember what film it is, fairly recent. But this, it might even have been the Oceans. I think it was the last Oceans film, the female.
It wasn't that recent. That was Oceans 8.
Oh my God.
That was many years ago.
I'm sure it's got a Met Gala setting to it.
I think you're right.
Anyway, you cannot outdo the reality of it because it is fucking madness. So there we go. That ends my section of what I've been watching.
Okay. Is there anything left for you? Or has Boydie covered everything?
Sorry.
He's covered a few things that I've watched. I've also continued to watch Malpractice. And in fact, I was so gripped, I continued watching it a little bit the last 5 minutes on the train because I'm up to episode 4 now. It is so good. Tom Hughes, we've said it before, is really good in this. And yeah, very impressive. Everyone in there, everyone involved is great. What else have I been watching? Now, I wanted to mention Change Your Mind, Change Your Life with Matt and Emma Willis, which isn't, it's on BBC One. And I wanted to mention it because it's part of BBC, I think it's in the month of May, they're raising awareness of mental health issues and wellbeing, et cetera. But what I liked about this is it's that it's cameras are allowed into therapy sessions with different people each episode. And it's just really interesting, I think. I mean, the thing is, the format doesn't allow for an in-depth analysis. So, you know, it's condensed, shall we say. It's not as thorough as maybe you'd like it. But I think it does give a valuable insight into therapy, the benefits of the different tools. And so I just wanted to flag that as I thought this was a really good thing that the BBC is doing. So it's informative and I think it helps just destigmatize therapy and mental health issues. So that's good. My public service announcement. And then the other thing I've been watching, which is very on brand for me, is Travels with Agatha Christie and Sir David Suchet on More4, which Boydo got me to review. And I enjoyed immensely because, as you know, I'm an Agatha Christie fan and Poirot fan. And it's basically Suchet on a tour that Agatha did about 100 years ago. Before she was famous, she went on this tour with her husband because they were promoting this exhibition about the British Empire. So they were going around the world exploring and promoting it. And a lot of the countries she's visited inspired her in her work. So that's quite a nice little tie-in. We see the different places she went to. And it's basically a travelogue. I mean, it's just Suchet having a nice time abroad and taking photos because he's an avid photographer. And I enjoyed being in his company.
And when's it on, Kay?
It's on. Such a
she has
shit.
No idea.
Yeah. So I said awesome. It was More4.
Yeah, well done. Yeah.
Go on then.
Yeah.
You do the details.
It's on More4, Wednesday, the 21st.
Look at
of
that
May.
Smug face.
He's yeah. so smug.
Well, I'm just providing this as with
To
facts.
Be fair, this is his job.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, More4, Wednesday, the 21st of May, 9 o'clock, 2025.
And the first episode is South Africa.
Okay. What have I been watching this week? I am, has to be so, are either of you, or have either of you, pressed on with Mobland?
No, I didn't.
I love it.
No.
Is it good? No. But I love it. I'm enjoying it so much. It is, yeah, it is very much that. I'm having so much fun with it. I've watched 6 episodes of that, and I can't wait for the next one to drop.
I really enjoyed the first, I think I watched 2, yeah.
It's so stupid. It, yeah. And yeah. It's so much fun.
Oh, good,
and I'm just, I'm having a bit of a whale of a time with it. I'm very much enjoying Tom Hardy's kind of eye-rolling performance in it.
Yeah,
it's a lot of fun. So enjoying Mobland, been watching
Wait, eye-rolling in what way? Not good?
Or just, no, not even that. It's just that he's kind of like, his character's just very kind of put upon and a bit like, oh yeah, all right, I guess I go and fucking clean up this mess now.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, I really...
Well, he's dealing with doofus.
Yeah,
right?
I'm just very much enjoying it. Like, it's all kicking off. It's great fun. So 4 more episodes to go. Very excited.
Is Helen Mirren still effing and jeffing?
She is indeed. She is really, really. Like, it feels like there's an unofficial off-camera competition between Pierce and Helen to see who can offend the Irish people most profoundly. And it's a straight tie, really, at this point. It's extraordinary. Loving Mobland. I've also, for reasons, watched half of the first season of Stranger Things this week.
What?
So, yeah. So, unexpectedly, I've started the Stranger Things rewatch, and I've watched the first 5 episodes of season 1 of Stranger Things.
That is mental.
Well, because the final season airs this year.
Yes.
And so I'm kind of thinking I might want to do a complete run-up to it and watch all the seasons in advance of
it.
But I'd forgotten, first of all, oh my God, Millie Bobby Brown is literally 11 when she first plays 11. And I mean, it shows you how long ago it was. But it's so good. Especially that first season. I really loved that first season.
Yeah, good from the start, that first season.
I think the best ones for me, and I may change my mind once I've done the rewatch, are the first season and the most recent season.
Yeah.
I think those are both excellent. But it's really, really good. It's kind of scary. The mystery of it's really good. The 80s of it's fantastic. The kids look so young. I'm really, really enjoying Stranger Things. And I'm, you know, watching it now, it's like, it's no surprise that this turned into a massive phenomenon. Because obviously when I first saw it, it was just another show that we were reviewing. Like, I had no idea what it was going to become.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's massive. So that's quite exciting. So enjoying Stranger Things.
I'm just going to interrupt you because you talking about Mobland reminded me of a message we had in about...
From Tom Hardy.
Yeah. Did I tell you this?
No.
No, it's not. It's from a listener, Niall, who wanted to say something about Pierce Brosnan's accent. So Niall says, as someone who grew up in the very same town as Pierce Brosnan, Navan, County Meath, for many years I've enjoyed the fact that the only time his native accent ever surfaces is when he utters those corny one-liners in James Bond and other movies. Brosnan has publicly said that Guy Ritchie sprung the whole play it Irish notion on him at the 11th hour. After a brief consultation with his long-standing dialect coach, he decided to specifically do an accent from County Kerry in Southwest Ireland. Now, anyone who knows that part of the country will know how over-the-top Irish that accent can sound. Does he nail it? Quite probably. Was he wise to choose it? Probably not. But I think it's a darn charismatic and immensely watchable performance anyway, so leave my Navan brother alone, from Niall. Oh, actually, so it says Niall Brady on his handle, but he's signed it off Neil. So Neil Niall. And he said he's from London and former County Meath. And he says, fully paid up and loyal Pilot TV subscriber for many years now.
Indeed.
Maybe when he's in London, he calls himself Neil. And when he's in Ireland, he calls himself Niall.
Maybe that's what happens. Yeah. He shifts.
Love that for Neil Niall.
But yes, that's fun. I read that out on the Empire podcast, actually, a couple of weeks ago when this very same conversation came up.
Oh.
But yes, I thought that was a nice note.
They discuss TV a lot on the Empire podcast.
Illegal.
Yeah, in the same way that you bring up films quite regularly on this one, Boyd. So it works out quite well.
Sometimes, occasions.
What else have I watched this week? So we talked about the third and fourth episode of The Last of Us on last week's Pilot Plus. That was exciting. So I've been rewatching those.
It was.
But speaking of spoiler specials, we have the Wheel of Time spoiler special is currently up on the Pilot Plus feed, where me and fantasy author C.L. Clarke and Helen talk about the most recent third season of the Wheel of Time. So obviously I've rewatched some of that. But more pertinent than that, Andor. So Andor episode 7-9 aired as we go out last week. And me and Sophie Petzl and Jordan King recorded a mammoth spoiler special for that. I mean, we booked the studio for an hour. We got to the end of that hour and weren't even close to finishing. So I found another studio so we can continue for like another 40 minutes. Plus, we had, I think it was like an hour-long interview nearly with Kyle Zoller, who plays Cyril Khan in it. And so, yeah, it's a monster. I haven't edited it yet, but it's going to be a big one. But that will be up by the time this podcast goes out. So you can listen to that on the Empire Spoiler Special feed. So yes, Andrew, I will say those episodes, you know, episodes 7-9, three of the most extraordinary hours of television. Just incredible. Absolutely incredible stuff. I'm obviously not going to spoil it here if you haven't seen it, but they are wonderful. Wonderful.
Well, you won't know what I think because... no, they are brilliant, yeah.
Boy, would you like to come on the Andor Spoiler Special next week?
I'm not going to be able to spend 2 fucking hours, that's for sure.
Oh, that's
a busy man.
He's a busy man. He may not be able to make it.
Consult my schedule.
Okay.
He'll be hungover from the BAFTAs.
I'll get my people to talk to your people.
Fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough. So I did that. And the other thing I've been doing is not watching a lot of TV. And the reason I haven't been watching a lot of TV is I've been playing a video game. I have been playing a video game called Claire Obscure Expedition 33.
Is this a new section of the pod that we can discuss?
So I figure if Boyd can talk about films and football, I can mention a computer game, because I do this very, very rarely. So Claire Obscure Expedition 33 is a French video game, and it is the game of the year this year, and it has actually gone into the annals of maybe one of my favourite games of all time.
Oh, wow.
And I think it's fantastic. It's got Voight-Actors, Andy Serkis is in it, Charlie Cox, who's Daredevil, is in it. The acting is incredible, the graphics are amazing, the gameplay is superb, the storytelling is really up there in video game narratives. Like, it's a really good, and in fact it's being adapted into a film.
Of course,
I've sold the rights, being turned into a film. I imagine the film will have kind of a YA bent to it because the plot lends itself to that. But it's kind of it's sort of set in the future, so Kay's out already. And like the world has been fractured, and essentially so Paris, a bit of Paris has broken off, and they call it Lumiere, and it just lives on its own. And what happens is in the distance on the old continent, they see there's a monolith. And every year this giant woman, who they call the Paintress, writes a number on the monolith, and she starts at 100, and every year it counts down. So it's 99, 98. And at this point, we're at 33.
What comes after 98?
Thank you, Helen. I nearly called you Helen. Thank you, Helen. I'll just call you Helen. It's fine. Everyone of that age dies. So basically, once it hits like 33, everyone of 33 dies. And so it's called the Gomars. It's all very French. And so every year, an expedition goes to the continent to try and stop the Paintress and stop these things from happening. So it's kind of a cool, high concept YA idea, but it's extremely well executed in this game. I highly recommend it.
Interesting.
There you go.
Cool.
That is my unpaid plug for Clair Obscur Expedition 33.
What's going on?
Did they film you playing it and put it on the news?
Huh? No, they did not film it and put it on the news like they did with Mario Kart World.
Mario Kart World. Yeah. Different game. I don't know where you get the time from. Rewatching Stranger Things, first of all, you've got about, I don't know, like 50 hours at least, haven't you, before season,
a fair bit.
The final season begins. And now you're playing computer games, which take hours and hours and
honestly,
hours as well.
If I told you how many hours, because I have played that game for. I mean, I know I'm not prepared to do it. I can't do it.
More than 50.
It's a lot. No, not more than 50, but it is a lot.
If I played computer games as well as everything else I do, I wouldn't be able to survive.
Yeah, that's true. You don't sleep.
No.
And you do watch a lot of football.
True. Yeah, but yeah, no, I couldn't cope with that. God.
Anyway,
luckily you don't need to because James will tell you about it.
That's right, I'll tell you about it. True. So that's what we've been watching and or playing this week. Mm. And see what I did there?
And or playing.
Shall we have a listener question, Kay?
Yes.
Helen?
Yes, let's. So this message comes from Stuart, who says, "Hi, Kay and the lads." Must have known you're going to talk about football. He said, just listening to this week's podcast where you gave the email address out and wondered who would be the first. I'm sure I'm not, but I'll chance it. I have a question for the postbag. Yes, I'm a plus subby. What prop from a TV show, useful or merely decorative, would you want to have as your own? I think I'd rather like a Doctor Who sonic screwdriver or a Star Trek replicator.
I think not only have we had this question before, but the person who sent it in gave those exact examples of what they wanted as well.
Oh.
Really?
I think.
Or was it, I emailed it to you a couple of weeks ago.
I genuinely think,
but like not recently, like years. I think we have definitely done it before. Either that or I'm having some kind of, you know, episode.
I mean, it's possible.
I think you've played that game so long, your brain's
Do you think that's
much.
It? Yeah.
I'm check the date on the email though. Is it 2012?
Well, Sonic Screwdriver wasn't, when?
I mean, many, many decades.
It's got some shoes I've literally been going for the entire
show. I was hoping that was a recent RTD.
Not at all. Okay, fine. But my answer to that question last time it was asked stands as now, and it would be the Bartlett for America napkin, which is framed in the West Wing, which Leo, first and foremost, gives the napkin to Jed. Jed has it framed, he gives it back to Leo, and after Leo's death, spoiler, Mallory gives it back to Jed, and he has it in the final episode of the show.
I mean, I've got business cards, David Brent business cards.
Really?
From the set.
Oh, wow.
Amazing.
The office. When I think I still...
Did you steal it?
No, he gave them to me. Him and Steve Merchant gave them to me as souvenirs. I've got a few things. So there's a couple of business cards and maybe even like a notepad or something from the office set. And I think I'm the only journalist who's ever allowed to visit the set, by the way, as well. just saying. Season two.
That's quite an honour.
So that's definitely... up there for me. And the other thing, this actually happened, which was that in the later, maybe the last season of Seinfeld or the penultimate, well, they're definitely in the latter years of Seinfeld. He had an Apple Mac in every series, right? And they would update it each season. So, you know, if you're starting off in the early 90s, by the time it got to the late 90s when the show mid to late on, when the show finished, they'd have gone through four or five iterations of an Apple Mac. And in the end, he ended up having this 20th anniversary Mac. Do you remember the 20th anniversary Mac? 20th anniversary Mac was a special limited edition Apple Macintosh computer before the era of Johnny Ive creating like iMacs and stuff. This was when really slickly designed, you know, eye-catching.
Is it one of the big back?
It has got a big back. It's almost like copper. No, this is like...
That's an iMac.
This is like styled in like copper and leather. And it's like a
leather?
Yeah, like leather backing on it. And it had like these Bose speakers, which at the time were amazing. And Seinfeld had one on his desk and I got one. Pretty much. It was quite expensive as well. Yeah, and I need to go. So I'm going to get that. And I've still got it in my... in fact, if anyone wants to buy it from me, they can.
It's probably worth some money now.
I think it is worth a few thousand quid, yeah, at least.
I love the difference between you, me, and James, right? So James and I are fantasizing about things that we'd love to have, and you're like, yeah, I got this, and I got that.
But I think I got it on my credit card, and, you know...
You're still paying it off.
It's probably still paying it off, effectively, yeah. But I remember, it was brilliant. I was thinking, oh, that looks amazing, that Apple.
I want me a leather Mac.
Yeah. Yeah, it is incredible. Now, I just need to find out. I haven't opened it or turned it on for literally years.
Wait, so you have used it, though, right?
I used it at the time, yeah. I used it at the time quite a lot. It was my computer, like desktop computer.
Worth.
Yeah. Every now and then I've looked on eBay and there's been one for like a couple of grand, and sometimes more. So, yeah, I don't need it. I haven't looked at it. I haven't used it for years and years. And
yeah,
I might as well just fucking sell it.
Yeah, you have to wipe all the porn off it first.
Of course. Yeah, of course.
It's just important.
Yeah, yeah.
So, wow. Yeah,
Jerry Seinfeld, prop of props.
That would be a good prop. I wouldn't mind that. A vintage Mac. But I think I'd still take my napkin.
Mine, keeping it on brand, mine would be Hercule Poirot's walking stick.
I thought you could say his moustache.
No, I think that'd be weird.
He probably needs that.
No, his stick, because then I could use it to beat you two with. No,
well, thank you. Wow.
Wow.
No, I could just prod you guys. I think that's what my prop would be.
Yeah, I like if I could have any prop of anything and it included films.
No, this is
no, I'm not allowed to.
No.
Well, I'm going to say anyway. It'd be an M41A pulse rifle from Aliens. That would be my absolute dream prop. You can buy those. Like, you genuinely can get
them.
Have you
seen...
But they're expensive.
You must have had a lightsaber in your time.
So when I went to Skywalker Ranch and was given a tour of George Lucas's archive, which is at Skywalker Ranch, I held the original lightsaber from Star Wars and the ones from, they're in cases. You get all the original hilts.
Do you have to wear gloves?
I probably should have done, but no.
Have you seen
your greasy paws?
Talking of lightsabers, have you seen the footage of Jake Gyllenhaal and Skarsgård from Presumed Innocent having a lightsaber fight in the middle of filming?
Peter Sarsgaard. Yeah.
Peter Sarsgaard.
No,
it's
I
really
haven't.
Fun. Well, it's on online. Yeah, Google it. It's brilliant. It's like in downtime they just have a massive lightsaber fight.
That's really funny.
Yeah, fantastic.
Well, yeah, all of those props. Can I just say, like, the props that are in the archive, if you are a Star Wars fan or indeed a Lucasfilm fan, are incredible. The Ark of the Covenant from Raiders of the Lost Ark is in that warehouse.
Wow,
it's a bit like the warehouse from the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's not dissimilar. There's the Darth Vader costume, the helmet, which they actually burn on the pyre in Return of the Jedi on Endor, and it's there and it's crispy because they literally burned it. It's incredible. There's so much cool stuff there. I geeked out massively, and I remember saying something like, "Can I take a picture?" And in retrospect, I think the answer they said was, "No, we'd rather you know." And I was like, and by that point, I was just away, and I took pictures of everything. It's me with the Ark of the Covenant, me with R2-D2. It was just I was a little overexcited,
say the least.
Yeah.
And for more film content, please go to Empire Podcast.
Yeah, there was no TV stuff there. Sorry. okay, fine. Did we answer a question there? I think
yes, we did.
I think that sounded like we answered a question. I'm going to say we answered a question there. Right, that was a listener question. If you would like to get in touch with Kay, do send your missives to pilottv@empiremagazine.com, for that is the only place you will now find them. She's lazy that way. So we have this week's guest. Let's have this week's guest. Russell T. Davies is the living legend who currently holds the keys to the TARDIS and with Series 2... because we can call it Series 2, right? It's now Series 2 of New Who, currently firing on all cylinders. Boydie did sit down for a mammoth chat with the man himself. Now, this conversation was nearly an hour long, and it is, quite frankly, fantastic. So we're going to give you a 20-minute chunk of the interview here, and for the rest of it, you're going to need to tune into Pilot Plus later this week. Yes, I know, we're cruel like that. But here's 20 minutes of it. If you want more, you know where to find it. Here is Boydie talking to the notorious RTD.
Hello, Russell T. Davies. Welcome to the Pilot TV podcast. You were saying how you should be on every week, and you should be on every week.
I'm like, I look at my diary. It says pilot. I'm like, yes, it was my weekly stint. RTD's view of television.
You wouldn't be able to get away. You'd get in so much trouble, wouldn't you?
And it would be 10 hours long. Me, which God
else. True. Now,
the last of you worked terrestrial TV in the land.
Exactly.
I still sit there watching Coronation Street at 8 o'clock. It's like,
me too. Yeah. I mean, I watch like all the Race Across the World. You have to watch live, I think.
You do. Yes.
Yeah.
They're becoming like more rare, though, aren't they?
That's true. But I still think people will be watching. Some people will be watching shows, live, so to speak, for years to come. I think I like to think.
I suppose. I mean, I just leave the telly on. It's just on all the time. Like, that's not a big compliment to every program maker out there. Oh, it's just on. I apologize for that.
Yeah. Fair enough. So I've just watched The Story in the Engine, which is episode 5.
of the current run. And this goes out just after the weekend. Monday after that will have aired.
Right. Great, great, great. Lovely.
So we're kind of over halfway through this series. How are you feeling about the whole thing? How's the reception been? How is it going for you?
I don't actually know because I'm not online. I don't particularly know reception. I mean, I have nice people saying nice things to me on Instagram, but I'm kind of aware that's an echo chamber. And if someone says something's not nice, I just block them. That takes exactly 2 seconds. So it's like I'm creating my own walls here. But I'm loving it. I think that team in Cardiff works so hard, and I love them. The costume designers, the artists, the designers, the grips, the chippies on it. It's like, it's such a lovely piece of work. I really think it's incredibly handsome. The finale is going out in cinemas. I think that'll be amazing. I wonder what that'll be like. I think it's a gorgeous finale. It's epic. So yeah, I think that'll work. I think that'll Yeah.
Is that both episodes of the last two episodes?
It will show up if you go out. The finale is episode 7 and 8. It goes out in episode 8, but they will show episode 7 again, building up to whatever time it transmits, 7 o'clock. But that will be, that would, it won't have been, I don't know if I'm supposed to say this, but I'm saying it. It's like that won't have been released on iPlayer beforehand. It won't have been on Disney Plus beforehand. It's literally like a premiere that night. You can watch it on BBC One, or if you go to the cinema, that's it. But that's exciting.
Well, that's really exciting. I want to go to the cinema on that. I have to see
you.
It.
Oh, yeah. It's epic. It's really epic. It's gorgeous. Yeah.
You love a big epic kind, and also a big event, don't you? Like you've the whole thing about May 24th and the episode going out the same night as Eurovision and the FA Cup final and all of this.
Yes.
I'm in awe of your planning. Like it must be a nightmare to plan something like that.
That is hard, especially with two great big broadcasters like the BBC and Disney Plus, because in these final days of terrestrial viewing, I thought it'd be very interesting to tie the whole series down into that week, those weeks of transmission. It's like, of course, you'll notice a lot of it is based around last year. We had the midnight drop, where episodes were dropped at midnight, and so even the word midnight is cropping up in episodes, like a sequel to midnight and stuff like that. Of course, this year they went and dropped the midnight drop, didn't they? And now it's 8 a.m. So you can't anticipate some things like that. But it was like weaving it, like in the old days, back in 2005, 2006, 2007, Doctor Who would have a week off during Eurovision, and I hate it. I used to hate that. I used to lose all momentum. And Also, of course, when we're streaming on Disney, that's not possible. You can't say to them, we're just going to have a week off because we've got this competition going. So it just makes sense to just think, well, let's do a great big Eurovision Song Contest episode, but call it the Interstellar Song Contest. So that it's a buzz on BBC One that night, because there is still a terrestrial audience. And that then means that therefore, I mean, what I didn't know was that they don't actually decide the date of the Eurovision Song Contest till much later than you think. Much, much later, I thought they win, and they say, right, next year it's on May the 17th. Oh, no. There's a couple of dates in May that could shift between. So we had to wait until, oh my goodness, was it September, October or something? We were going, please give us the date. But it was kind of worth it. And then that means that then the penultimate episode is going out on May the 24th. So that whole episode is about May the 24th of 2020. Right. You kind of have to take a deep breath. And look, I don't do this work. It's my execs and people around me at the BBC who led up to go guarantee that it'll go out on this date and that Disney buys into that day, which means you have to explain the Eurovision Song Contest to Disney.
Yeah.
I've got no idea what it is. But when you say to them, this goes out in 100 territories, then they understand it. It's like, you know, and it fits a streamer that goes out to all those territories. We can think, look, there's a contest that all these countries are watching. So this will tie in with all these countries at the same time. So then they genuinely sit up, they get it. It's just a lot of work. And believe you me, that day kept on changing. At some points, we were looking at all the times when someone on screen says May the 24th, going, oh, are we going to dub this?
Oh, gosh.
Are we going to edit this? No, and we end this with their backs on camera. Oh, they were mid-lovers.
What a nightmare, yeah.
Oh, May the 31st. Like, there were genuinely moments where we were staring at it and going, we're going to have to do this. We just held our nerve, really. It took a lot of, and again, it's on me holding my nerve. It's people at the BBC saying, we've got a great executive called Nick Lambon and the head of drama called Lindsay Salt, who held their nerve. And so I said, no, this is what we want, and we're sticking to it. And for once, it worked. I don't think anyone's noticed. I don't think it's had any doubt whatsoever. But we haven't reached that. We haven't reached that Eurovision night yet. I think feel great, which is a great big party on BBC One. And they've got special trailers for it and stuff like that. It's just fun.
Yeah, totally. But what happens if the FA Cup final goes to extra time and penalties? Because that's what starts at 4:30.
Is that a football thing?
Yes. What is a football thing. It's the biggest football thing of the year, in a way.
I ended up talking about that one point. I was calling extra time overtime. I was saying, if the game goes into overtime, and afterwards someone went, it's not called overtime, you idiot. That's showbiz language. It's we don't know. And I find that very exciting. Will Doctor Who go out that night?
Yeah.
If overruns, extra time.
Yeah.
There might even be things called penalties or something.
Yeah.
I mean, I do love those things. I mean, that's very, very exciting. I love it when the game goes to penalties, actually. And so obviously Eurovision is absolutely fixed to begin at 8 o'clock across Europe.
Right.
So there's no shifting there. So we might be, if we're squeezed into a tight little gap, we will have to go off air. And I think though, of course, the episode will have dropped that morning on the
right. iPad. Okay,
that
right.
might drive. I mean, when we were arguing about this at the BBC, that might drive a lot of people to the iPlayer, which is always a BBC plan.
Yeah,
I mean, that is the fastest growing streamer in Britain, is the iPlayer.
Yeah.
So that kind of works for a big streaming plan, and I think they said, "Oh my God, we'll show on Sunday night." And, you know, I think Antiques Roadshow repeat might get knocked out, and we show on. I don't know. I kind of didn't pay attention to that. The stuff really was like, it's not. You know, it's we are reaching the days where its actual transmission is ceasing to matter so much.
Sure, sure.
And that equally is the little harbinger of the future. So so it doesn't matter in a way. It really doesn't matter.
No, sure. In fact, it'd be quite exciting, the kind of tension when they have to make the big announcement.
Well, I know. even I will be watching those that extra time and the penalties. It's genuinely exciting. I think it happened before once. There was, I think, an episode transmitted called Rise of the Cybermen that came out of a big long final that went on, and it was just exciting.
Yeah.
All of these things that added excitement to transmission, which in as we head towards streaming and dropping things of a morning, is kind of lacking that excitement. So I think the final years, and they might be the final years of terrestrial transmission, let's do everything we can with it to have fun.
Yeah. Brilliant, yeah. And I feel like this series, like every, I mean, this is always the way to some extent with Doctor Who, but you've really pulled the stops out in making each episode an event. Like, if they all feel big and bold and huge, ambitious.
It's fun. I'm puzzled. Yes, thank you. And that is the plan, and that is paying off. We did last year.
Yeah.
And people are saying that to me a lot. I mean, I live in quite a student-y area of Manchester, and I get, which is very nice, I get stopped in the street by students, which is always incredibly polite and lovely. Mm. And that seems to be a thing they all keep saying, oh my God, it's swinging this year. It's taking such wild swings. And I think whether people are just coming back to the program, slightly getting used to it again. Because last year, we went from like a fairy tale on a church on Ruby Road to space babies on a distant space, to the Beak Boss, to a war-torn planet called Castarian 3, to Wales, to Bridgerton, We did this last year, and yeah, this year people seem to be saying, God, the program is really different every week. So I'm slightly puzzled. And we were doing that last year as well. Why? Well, I can't. What do you think we're doing? I mean, you're saying it to me.
I guess it's like, I don't know. There's something about this series episodes. It's almost, you know what it is? I get sent the press releases, right? And the press, the descriptions, the official descriptions that you obviously have to okay. Yes. And they're almost like they've quite cleverly kind of like underestimate the bigness of each story. So you get the official description, which is like, oh, you know, the doctor arrives in so-and-so into a barber shop, you know, for example. And you're like, oh, okay, yeah. And they tell stories to each other. And you're like, okay. And then it turns out to be this massive, gigantic thing. I think it's almost maybe down to the marketing and the...
I write those synopses.
Right, of course.
I would have written last year's as well. I did never let a synopsis pass my desk.
No.
I love those things. I think they're a huge part of the storytelling of the show. But I did them last year.
Are you being more cunning in kind of misdirecting us, you know, in these things? For example, like even the Lucky Day, right? Lucky Day, which is the week before, with Jonah Howard King's character, like that. you had no idea what was going to happen in that show, in that story. And and completely much bigger and huger and so many themes and ideas and reflections on the way of society is at the moment in that story. Obviously, you wouldn't even begin to allude to in the synopsis.
No. But then you could compare that to Fine Time last year with Callie Cook as Lindy Pepperbeam. She was a monster.
Yeah.
And the I'm quite sure the synopsis for that said Lindy Pepperbean's living very happily on a planet, and there seem to be monsters at the edge of her vision or something like that. I would have written that. Can the doctor save her? But same trick. I mean, except for one, she more or less turns out to be a monster. Although no, you have no idea of how much of a monster she is until much later on. So it's like I will parry you. Every example you think of,
you're
as well. I'm not denying what you're saying, and you're a viewer, Boyd, and you get this stuff better than anyone. So I'm fascinated to hear you saying it, and I can't quite work out why it feels different this year.
Mm, yeah.
I'm one person who should know why it feels different. I'm glad.
Yeah.
I think maybe there's some bigger stunts like Eurovision. The one everyone's referring to is Eurovision and Thailand. So maybe that kind of sets a bar. That's a bigger
stunt
of transmission than we did last year. So maybe that's bigger. I don't know.
I'm thinking of that a bit. Yeah, yeah, sure.
Yeah, yeah, it could be had. So it's a mystery. People will write essays about it.
They will.
One or two people might even tweet about it. You never know, in passing.
They'll X about it, exactly, yes. I want to ask you about how you plot the big overall arc. So you've got Mrs. Flood, who's in every episode, presumably will carry on being in every episode, brilliantly by Anita Dobson. And it's like you're giving Anita Dobson, all these different little lovely cameos building up to the revelation of who the hell she is. And then you've got this May 24th thing going on as well, and not getting
Yes, and why can't Belinda get home?
Why can't Belinda get home?
It's funny, these things. You kind of half plan them and you half surf them. The funny thing is, I think Doctor Who's fundamentally an anthology show. When you're talking about the big switch that we're making, Eurovision, Conrad, the Beatles, it's a different setting and a different story, and sometimes a different genre and a different style every week. A scary one like The Well, a funnier one like Mr. Riding, although that was dark. I mean, I can see what you mean about the swings, actually. That is a very big swing. Going from Mr. Riding to The Well is a bigger swing than that. Yes, okay. And I get it.
I win this argument.
You win. I get it.
Ring-a-ding was huge, yes.
But I never want to bog it down in the continuity stuff is very light. I mean, the episode that just went out, the story and the engine, and it stops and walks by. I think she got six words. She says, "Hello, but they just picked up my pills."
Yeah.
And that's it. She's gone. So if you don't, the casual viewer or even the regular viewer to get bogged down in it. And I'm not sure there's a proper mention of May the 24th in that at all. There's a feeling of, we must get Belinda home. Yeah, they start. That's why they look to Lagos, because it's a tech hub in 2019. It's light. Mm. It's light. It's a lit. Some weeks Mrs. Flood gives you a little bit more. There was an episode a couple of weeks ago where she was suddenly very interested in The Vindicator.
Mm.
And that pays off. A bit of nonsense. That's like, why is she so interested in The Vindicator of all things? This device the Doctor's using to navigate through time and space. And so little tiny bits. And you start off saying, we can't get Melinda home. Then there's a growing realization that they can't get home, maybe because there's no home to go to, that something has happened to Earth on May the 24th, 2025. So you just build it line by line. Some weeks we leave it. Mrs. Flood didn't really do anything to the story in the end. She didn't add to the story. She's just there as a little reminder. But that doesn't matter. If you're annoyed for that 10 seconds, then good luck to you. It's dying. It's just harmless. So it's light, but enough to kind of generate debate. Here we are talking about it.
Yeah.
And it's good. If kids are in school, I say, oh, who do you think that woman is? What's going on? That's a great thing. What did happen on May the 24th? It's I love you. And from people on my Instagram going, my birthday is on May the 24th. I love that. We're doomed in that case. We'll never get that. Let me tell you, it'll be an awful day of fire and blood. But so it's light. I believe it lights. And yet the conversation about it becomes more complex than it ever is on screen, actually. That's the strange thing. But I kind of like that. At least we talked about it. It's a good thing. It's like Anita. Talk about Anita. It's like, Domps, as I call her. If we hadn't cast her, that woman could have disappeared. It's like, when I say a surfer, you see how it's going. I mean, the moment you cast Anita Dobson, I was like, oh my God, we've got Anita Dobson. And what a lovely woman she turns out to be.
Yeah.
She's a proper, proper old trooper. She's done it all.
Yeah.
She knows how funny it all is. And she knows how much people love her. The most amazing moment for me is when we did a Doctor Who prompts last summer in the Albert Hall. So it was a crowd of 5,000 people. And she walked onto that stage and owned it. I've never seen anything quite like it. She came on a character and they, you could have heard a pin drop. She absolutely owned 5,000 people in the Parvan. That's what I mean by a trooper. She can do it all. She's amazing. So if you've got someone like that, then you're not going to let it go.
Yeah, absolutely.
She could have just been the next door neighbor and I could have just sidelined her and forgotten it. But then you're like, oh, how could you not work with this woman again and again and again and again? And I could, there are reveals. There are, it's not just eternal mystery tricking away forever. There's proper, hilarious reveals coming up. It's like, it's good stuff. And it's Evita at her best. So that's exciting.
Yeah, that's very exciting. Yeah, and I feel like there'd be more the more twists maybe as well. Like within each episode, there's a lot of like brilliantly.
I wonder. Yes, I mean maybe we are. Maybe I am. Yeah, I mean I don't know. It's all I can imagine. But is it we just sit here and those lovely writers sit there like we just sing this? There's a lot of product out there. There's a lot of television out there. So if you can keep your stuff being surprising and twisting. Yeah. Churning, then that's good. I don't know if that works. Yeah, it's a programming constant debate.
That was Bordy and Russell T. Davis, and time for this week's news. What's been happening this week, Kay? The new Foundation trailer, you say? Oh my God, what did you think of it?
I didn't even click. I didn't even click on the link because I thought I can't bear it, and my heart sank because I thought it's back again to haunt me.
It is back again to. I can't wait. I can't wait
what
to make you,
think
you
of
watch
the trailer?
It. Of course, it was fantastic. Now. It's interesting. So David S. Goyer, who was the showrunner, is no longer the showrunner. He has stepped back. He's still writing for it, but he is not the showrunner anymore. We talked about this on the Empire podcast last week. Oh. And at one point, I made an erroneous statement that he was no longer connected to the production. And then I forgot to correct it. No, I forgot to correct it. And I asked Chris to cut it out. So if he did, I've just dropped myself in it for no reason. But if he didn't, then this is me saying I acknowledge that I got that wrong. Anyway. He's not the showrunner, but this is still looking amazing. I have some consternation about it because he's no longer at the wheel, but it looks really, really good. I'm so excited.
Even I watched the trailer dutifully. And I thought, oh, it does look really good.
Can I get a pass?
Really good. Can you get a pass?
Yeah.
What, like an early access pass to view the episode?
No,
yeah.
No, you absolutely can.
I will contact Apple and get those put into your queue straight away.
That's the only time that you and me have had a little bust up.
Did we have a bust up?
Well, not a bust up, but I was very cranky with you because you gleefully said I had to watch it,
failed to because you stopped before the end.
Yeah, I stopped before the end because it was really long as well, wasn't it? It wasn't a standard hour-long episode. I don't think it was like 2 hours of torture.
Was it? No, so I think she watched the first episode of the first series, which is a longer episode. Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. Right, yeah.
Yeah, didn't make it to the end. Staying power.
That is one of the shows that I do find confusing, very confusing.
Yes, so imagine what it was like for me.
Yeah, so I might
Your psycho history, Kay. Is that what you're telling me?
No, I'm not.
But they did a good job with the trailer, I have to say, to make it look exciting and thrilling and enticing. Like they had all action-y bits, whereas we know in reality there's going to be long, drawn-out conversations about fuck knows what in the middle of it to confuse me and, you know, others like me who don't easily understand complicated, hard sci-fi. Is that what you call it?
I mean, it is hard sci-fi. Hard sci-fi. Yes, very much so.
Yes, yes.
Anyway, in genuinely exciting news, it's been announced that Sarah Phelps is going to adapt another Agatha Christie novel.
That is exciting.
Yes, Endless Night. Apparently, it's a ghost story and a love story, and it's about obsession and the darkness that lurks in us all when we want too much.
Oh, this is exciting because Agatha Christie, when Agatha Christie does the supernatural, I really like that, even if it's just supernatural adjacent. Do you remember it's the most recent Poirot film, which is Death in Venice, Murder in Venice, what's it called? You know the one I'm talking about.
Yes, it was something in Venice.
Which has like a supernatural vibe to it. And I really enjoyed the kind of that convergence of the supernatural and the Agatha Christie whodunit. Obviously, Kay, not normally here for the supernatural, but supernatural Agatha Christie, I think you could get on board with.
I mean, anything AC, and anything Phelpsy. Also,
anything Phelpsy, yes.
Yeah, it's just brilliant that Phelpsy is back working on an Agatha Christie series.
It's her sixth adaptation.
Because, however... I mean, I quite like the last one. What was the last one we did?
Was it The Pale Horse?
Yeah.
What was it?
No.
She's done, and then there were none, The Witness for the Prosecution, Ordeal by Innocence, The ABC Murders, and The Pale Horse.
No, I meant the most recent non-Phelps one.
Oh.
Like, there have been a couple. I think there have been two or three non-Phelps.
Well, the last one we did was the one, the
Yeah.
One on the, with the, I'm trying to think what it's called.
The one with the thing.
Yeah, the one with Angelica Houston in bed is what I'm talking about. Exactly. But I don't remember what it was called.
Exactly,
yeah.
Which I did enjoy. I enjoyed that one. I didn't enjoy the previous one, which went out Christmas for a lot, so that was poor. But the they're still not up, they're still not got the Phelps magic. So yeah, it's exciting that she's going down that route again. Thrilling.
Something I forgot to mention that I should have mentioned, I egregiously didn't mention, is when... in, let's say, one of the Andor episodes, I won't be specific, there is a Les Mis moment, a very Les Mis-y moment. I mean, the whole episode is very Les Mis, if I'm honest with you.
Well, they break out into song.
I mean, literally, yes, but that's actually, but not a song from Les Mis, but yes, they actually do.
Do they?
But
there is, oh, yeah, they do, you're
yes,
right.
They do.
I've just remembered, yeah.
Yeah.
This is why I'm not on the podcast.
No, this is why, clearly, you just don't pay attention. Yeah. But there was a man who, you know the character, the famous character in Les Mis, Enjolras, who waves the French flag, or he waves the flag, and then he gets killed over the barricade. You know that one, the famous one?
I think so, yeah.
There is spoiler a similar James. Character in Andor waving a flag on there, and that is Stuntman Mark, who listens to this very podcast.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah,
oh, that's
waving
good.
The flag.
Oh, that's good.
So
facts.
Props to Stuntman Mark. He Brilliant. Was he went down in history in one of the greatest episodes of TV ever. So
yeah. That was the episode I said I alluded to how brilliant it was, and I said, and you were like, which one? It is the standout episode, and I was saying there's a standout episode, and you were like, is there what episode is it?
Well, maybe I was being coy, so as not to spoil it for everyone.
Okay, well, that is the one I was talking about. Anyway, yes, indeed,
it is. It is magnificent.
In more very good news,
yes.
There's a tie-in. Yeah, I'm just getting it before Kate does all the news herself. House legend, as in star of House, Hugh Laurie. That we all favour House, is starring in a new Apple TV Plus thriller series from the creator of Hijack, George Kay. And that's a very exciting coming together of talents, I think. It's going to follow the rise and fall of Felix Carmichael, played by Hugh Laurie, the elusive and powerful head of notorious British crime syndicate The Capital. Untouchable for 20 years, Carmichael is finally apprehended, but while he's held in the infamous Staplehurst prison, it becomes clear he's been betrayed by one of his own.
Mm.
And he tries to weed out the traitor, etc. But yeah, Laurie, K, not K, K.
I mean, that would be the ultimate dream.
Yeah, bring it on, I say. There's a lot of Apple-based news this week, by the way.
Yeah, you must be excited because the studio's
it's been renewed,
the second
yes.
season.
Yeah, that's exciting.
That's exciting. Yeah, I'm very, very thrilled by that.
None of us are really what I would describe as hardcore Yellowstoners, but there's another Yellowstone show in development. And this is the interestingly titled Why:Marshals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a funny title.
And there it is. And it's got Luke Grimes, and he's going to be back in his role as Case Dutton. and the log line is such. Ready? Mm. Why Marshals will see Case combining his skills as a cowboy and Navy SEAL to bring range justice to Montana, where he and his teammates must balance family duty and the high psychological cost that comes with serving as the last line of defense in the region's war on violence. This sounds like Walker, Texas Ranger.
Oh, yeah, it does. Yeah.
What is Taylor Sheridan doing with all this money?
I mean, do you know what? I'd be fascinated to know what he spends it
all on. Surely, just keep walking.
I don't know. I don't know. It's just more cash in Sheridan's pocket, isn't it?
Yeah. Good for him.
Good for him, indeed. And there's also a show about Ryan Phillippe as a former NASCAR mechanic, and it's called Motorheads. Did you see this?
No.
Well, anyway, it
I
is...
I wonder what happened to Ryan Phillippe.
Yeah, well, he's driving a car, apparently. Mm. And he is going to... It's Prime Video, and the series is about first love, first heartbreak, and turning the key in your first car. So there you go. All much the same. And I'm sure the aging Ford Fiesta that was my first car had much the same appeal.
But your current car's a Porsche, though, isn't it?
Lambo.
A Porsche. I drive a Lamborghini, clearly, Boydy. But no, I was never a car fanatic, and everyone gets really excited about their souped-up cars. Honestly, my little red Ford Fiesta, I was very fond of it, but no one could accuse me of being a petrol head.
No, I had a little red Peugeot.
Did you? Like a 205?
Yeah, very small, yeah.
Boydy, can you drive? Do you have a license?
No, I don't drive. I don't have a license.
He gets driven.
Boyd has a driver. He doesn't need to drive himself.
Yeah. It's bullshit. But
if he's not in the PJ, he's been driven around with a chauffeur.
Ridiculous.
Yes, you are.
Any other news?
Well, friend of the pod, Harlan Coben, has had news. He's hosting a CBS unscripted true crime series called Final Twist.
Hmm.
Yes. Prolific mystery author Harlan Coben is moving into Rod Serling territory, is the first sentence of the report on Variety, which amused me because a lot of people won't know who the hell Rod Serling. Rod Serling hosted The Twilight Zone and was like an author turned to presented the episodes of The Twilight Zone. And now, Harlan will be on screen, talking audiences through gripping tales of murder, high-profile crimes, and life-altering surprises, each meticulously unraveled to reveal hidden truths, deceptions, and lies. Basically, it's a new series based on the fact that he is the king of the twist in his brilliant novels. Mm. Yeah, there you go.
Okay, and with that, we are done with the news, and we move on, as is our tradition, to reviews. And first up this week, we have Murderbot on Apple TV+. This is based on the Murderbot Diaries by Martha Wells. It's a show by Chris and Paul White of American Pie fame. And this sees Alexander Skarsgård as a corporate security cyborg, or SEC unit, which manages to reprogram itself and become self-aware. And speaking of people who have broken their programming to become self-aware, let's hear about this from Boyd Hilton.
Very good.
Yeah, this is an odd one. Is how I will preface my feelings about Murder. But I was really looking forward to it. You think, you know, Alexander Skarsgård, always good. Got a really good cast. Noma Dumuzwani, who's always brilliant. I saw her in the first production of the Harry Potter play. You know, the like 5-hour stage version of Harry Potter. She was in the version that I saw back in the day a few years ago. David Dastmalchian, who's been in some excellent films recently. Sabrina Wu, who's very good and interesting. And Akshay Khanna, who plays plays a kind of quite cheeky, saucy character. Who wants to have a thruple.
In a carry-on styling.
He wants to have a thruple with the character played by Sabrina Wu and her girlfriend.
That seems fair.
I mean, you know, it's the first thing that comes to your mind.
Yeah, thruples.
Thruples. What's weird about this show is, and I haven't read the original books.
Which are very popular, has to be said.
No, I haven't.
But a friend of mine recommended them and said they're brilliant.
Right.
So, but yes,
Helen O'Hara?
It wasn't Helen. Okay. I don't know if Helen's actually
read them. The lovely Helen.
Yeah. But my friend Ali is a big fan of the Murderbot Diaries.
Okay. Because it's got... So, my problem with the show is I couldn't really get a handle on what the murder bot was exactly.
Okay.
So he is, as played by, you see, he decommissions himself or takes out his own, he kind of hacks into himself, right, mm-hmm. at the beginning.
He frees himself from the kind of his behavioural restraints.
Yes.
From the governor module that's been inserted.
Right. And he's got some level of free will and self cognition.
Yes.
So he's like, well, what part of him? And he, by the way, narrates. We get to listen to his internal monologue, which is basically the internal monologue of a human being. Just a kind of interesting, human being with a certain spin on life and, you know, certain issues and stuff like that. But on what level? Is he still a robot? Is he still a bot in any way? It's like, it's just a character. It could just be a human being with, you know, and. The only thing that kind of makes him a sci-fi robot type character is the fact that obviously he's got certain powers, but he himself was kind of decommissioned himself from using those powers anymore. So the bottom line is I found the whole premise of the show bewildering and confusing, and I wasn't really sure what the point was. And you're kind of led... He starts working for this unit that's investigating planets, right? Seeing how...
Like a survey thing,
seeing how hospitable or not these planets are. But there's no real plot driving... There's a kind of hint at a mystery.
How many have you seen?
I've seen two.
Okay. You start to get a clearer idea of where it's going in 3 and 4.
Oh, okay. So it doesn't seem to be going anywhere, really. There's a big giant worm creature thing in this planet that comes out of nowhere, which reminds me of there's a similar thing in another recent show as well, a giant big wormy.
Like a sandworm.
Like a June sandworm, yeah, to be fair. But there's another show that had a sandwormy type thing, and I can't remember what show that was. I quite enjoyed elements of it, and he's kind of intriguing, the characters, and confusing at the same time, as I've alluded to. And I like Alexander Skarsgård, and I really like, particularly like Noma Dumuzwani's character, Dr. Mensa. She's kind of in charge of the whole thing. She's like an old hippie kind of figure, like scientist hippie. But I didn't find there was any great narrative drive to it, certainly for the first two episodes that I watched. Yeah, so I came away with thinking it's not anywhere near required viewing, despite the talent involved. Because I like the Weitz brothers. The Weitz brothers, they did A Battle Boy as well, which
they did
a brilliant version of A Battle Boy. But I was disappointed, I have to say, so far. And I think unless you tell me that it really gets going in episode 3 and 4, etc., then I probably wouldn't persevere with it.
Well, I probably don't need to, because Kay will obviously have watched the entire season. So, Kay, what did you make of Murderball?
Yeah, I was bewildered by it. And also, is it trying to be funny?
So it's interesting that the boy didn't mention this.
Because I just didn't find it funny. No, I thought it was trying to be funny, but I just didn't laugh.
No. And I forgot to mention, sorry, the show within the show is that the bot watches this like Star Trek style.
Well, it's kind of like a soap opera. It's a soap opera called The Rise and Fall of Sanctuary Moon.
Yes.
So whenever SecUnit isn't doing his duty, he's basically just watching this soap opera continuously, hundreds and hundreds of episodes of it. He's obsessed with it.
Yeah.
And it's this incredibly camp, almost like a riff on a cross between like a trashy soap opera and like 60s Star Trek.
Yes.
But it features Clark Gregg, John Cho, DeWanda Wise, and Jack McBrayer in these kind of incredibly over-the-top comedy kind of like pastiche roles. And it's, I think for me, more than anything else, that's emblematic of the fact, the thing that the word that you guys haven't almost mentioned is tone. Like the tone of this show, and I know I'm obsessed with tone, the tone of this show is quite difficult to pin down. Because on the one hand, it is a big budget Apple TV sci-fi. But it's also a half hour comedy.
Mm.
And these two worlds have met. And how they gel together is, I would argue, a little uneven, because the sci-fi stuff is quite vibes-based and not, shall we say, plotty and propulsive in the way that you've alluded to. And don't get me wrong, stuff does happen in episode 3 and especially in episode 4. There's some action and whatnot goes on. But you're not sure in the first few episodes, like, where's this going? But also, you've got this internal monologue, which is quote-unquote humorous. But is it?
No.
And you've got this kind of these weird sort of like surreal asides to this soap opera, which are funny, but are they?
No.
And I think therein lies the kind of problem that it's a comedy that isn't really overtly funny. Like, it's really amusing, and his internal monologue is kind of like, it'll make you smile. Yeah, he's quite sardonic, and I mean, it's not funny.
No.
And if it was just the internal monologue, I think really amusing is enough. Like, you can get away with that. But because you have this slightly surreal soap opera thing, you're now in silly territory. And if you're going to be silly, you'd best be fucking funny. And I think my problem with this is, because the soap opera stuff isn't actually funny, it just feels weird. And it pulls the tone into strange places. And the supporting characters, again, they're a little bit heightened. They're like a little bit, but not super funny. Like, if someone told you, oh, it's actually not a comedy, it's a drama, you could just about sell that.
I like it when he goes high pitch. Yeah.
And he's doing a little jig.
I'm doing a little dance. What do you think?
I'm just going to summarise it by saying, I feel that your monologues at the beginning of the podcast are funnier.
Wow. That's damning with faint praise.
You know what it reminded me of? It's funny that I interrupted Kay and then you went on your epic. You're right, I agree with you. What it reminded me of is Galaxy Quest.
But that is funny.
Right, I know, that's what I'm about to say. It reminded me of Galaxy Quest, but with no laughs. Like, as if Galaxy Quest had been denuded of its wit and humour. Because it's definitely trying to be funny, in answer to your point. 100% trying to be funny and failing. It's just not funny. And so, it's not funny.
It's a waste of the talent.
Well, it's not funny, and it feels very contrived to me, particularly the watching the soap opera thing, watching the show within the show thing. I think they seem to think it's so clever and amazing. And it is, the most notable thing is they've got those good cast members in the show within the show. The internal monologue is just too much of it. It's just not, it's kind of, it gets irritating after a while because there's a lot of it. There's more, it's practically as much of it as there is in you. Almost the whole of you is narrated
by. I've got a question though. If it was funnier, would you tolerate it more? I think you would.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, it's just
interestingly,
not funny.
That you mentioned the internal monologue in you is funny.
Yes.
Because it's incredibly dark and dry, but it's genuinely funny. The timing on it is really on point.
So, and then And there's not even, for me yet, after two episodes, a narrative thread that I'm interested in either. So it's kind of, yeah, the more I think about it, the more disappointed I am.
I think the monologue does grow on you. Like, I got into the rhythm, into the vibe of the show, and it got to the point where after four episodes, I was quite enjoying it. And I am quite enjoying it. And I will probably watch the rest of it, because I'm actually having kind of a good time with it. Obviously, it's very much my bag. Not so much the humour, obviously. But I...
Well, you'll be all right,
because
there's no
humour. Maybe that's why I like it, because it's not funny.
But I
just, you know, I'm getting into the room, and I quite like his slightly eye-rolly, a little bit like neurodiverse type robot thing that he's got going on. Like, it's a really, really interesting character reading, and I've got a little bit into the groove of
but
it.
I know what you mean, but let's face it, that character just doesn't make any sense.
No, of course it doesn't. But I mean, it's a self-aware robot. What do you want from me?
Yeah.
how does that make sense? I don't know.
How is it different to just a human?
Well, he looks at it through the lens of being a machine.
I have to say, I'm a bit over. This is a wild general. But this show drove me to it, kind of android robot characters that are so human, and they're practically just human. And it might have kind of almost the whole point, you know, the whole, it's happened to me with Westworld, that, you know, after a while, who cares who's a human and who's because they're all the same anyway.
I don't know. I think there's an existential quandary in these kind of characters, and very much so in Westworld, where it's like, what is it to be alive? What is what is personhood? All of these things. I think that these are themes that kind of come up in this
as well.
They're
trying to probe that, but that's a tight.
Yeah, I must admit, it's not quite as profound as maybe, you know, some of the Westworld stuff. But look,
Blade Runner did it. We don't.
I mean, it did. Yes, all of this stuff has been covered many, many times in science fiction. But yeah, it doesn't mean you can't do it again.
Yeah.
I think I will end up watching the rest of this.
Wow.
And they are only half an hour an episode. So yeah, I mean,
it is science fiction.
It is sci-fi. It's an Apple sci-fi.
Also, usually he's not as tolerant. Like you wouldn't usually go wait for three episodes to pass for it to get good.
I think it being short helps.
Yeah.
And it being an Apple sci-fi immediately made me want to like it. Mm-hmm. And I have succeeded in getting myself. Do you like it? So
yeah.
I'll be interested to see how the series pans out and how I feel about it at the end of it. But Murderbot then, Apple TV Plus.
Friday, the 16th of May, 2025.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Next up, we have Hysteria, a comedy horror thriller while we're doing kind of tonal genre spanning shows. This one's set in the 1980s and charts the fortunes of a heavy metal band amid the satanic panic of that era. It aired last year in the States on Peacock, but it lands on Paramount Plus here in the UK this week. Kay,
mm-hmm.
were you hysterical for Hysteria?
I wasn't hysterical for Hysteria, but I enjoyed it. I thought it was entertaining. So it's, as you say, set in the 80s. I had no clue about the paranoia around satanic cults of the time. Did you know?
Funnily enough, this is obviously covered quite heavily in the most recent series of Stranger Things.
Oh, okay, fine. Well, you know, I skipped that. So I had no clue about it, but I enjoyed Wikipedia-ing it. And it really taps into that paranoia because this centres around a group of misfit teenagers led by Dylan, played by MJ Anthony, who are in a heavy metal band. They are... I don't want to say rubbish, but they're not very successful. You know,
they're pretty good, actually. I was very impressed.
Well, they're not popular, put it like that, the ruse. They're not popular. They find it hard to get an audience. And they're treated, you know, pretty shabbily at school.
It's called Death Crunch.
Yes.
Spelt D-E-T-H, because of course it is. And Crunch with a K.
Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so they're not popular or successful in that regard. But then when a quarterback from their high school goes missing, and there's a pentagram on the garage door of this kid, Dylan has the smart idea of kind of having a satanic gimmick for their band would, you know, draw more people to them, like, you know, it would cause a bit of interest. And so that's what they do. And it works, right? Because the popular guy, the girl that he fancies, suddenly takes an interest in him and they get everyone wanting to come to their gigs, which is fantastic. Only as more and more people go missing and bad things start happening, they are then at the center of the investigation because they've been very vocal about supposedly being into satanic rituals, etc. So, and I want to say that Julie Bowen's in this from Modern Family, who I love. Do you know what? I found it really entertaining. And I thought he particularly, MJ Anthony, was great in the lead role.
It also doesn't just star Julie Bowen, it also stars...
Anna Camp.
Anna Camp, yeah, from You.
Yeah, indeed.
Twins.
Maddie and Reagan from
yes,
You.
Yes, exactly. It did feel like... It's funny you talked about Stranger Things, because that was my main feeling. I felt it was like an offshoot of Stranger Things in some ways, but not as good. Not quite. It felt a little bit slightly low budgety, a bit like it didn't quite. It was Stranger Things, for example, to labour the comparison, looks amazing and feels like a huge budget epic thing. This felt like a little bit like they hadn't quite backed the creator with as much money as it might needed. I don't know. It felt a little bit thin in terms of its kind of visuals. And then every now and then there'd be a scene that was like a big, you know, blood red thing, like from a Dario Argento film or something, and with like using big horror atmosphere and tropes. And then it would be, I'm really going to talk about tone again in a minute. I can sense it rising in myself, even though I didn't intend to really. But no, I've already got myself into it, and James is prepared.
His
now.
Hackles are raised.
My tonal shift t-shirt is in the cupboard, ready to come out.
You've never worn that since. We've never seen it again.
I know, but they'd be a bit mad too, wouldn't it, in public?
You should wear it every week.
No, you should have it underneath your shirt, and then you can just like the Hulk rip it open.
I've still got it somewhere. So anyway,
it's his bed t-shirt.
It is a bit of a mess, I think. In fact, quite a lot of a mess, I think, because it's kind of like, on the one hand, it's about that true atmosphere that there was of kind of moral panic and dread about.
Do you remember it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
really?
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
And it was, D&D was a part of this as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And rock and roll
people,
and all sorts of things.
People were ridiculous, you know. This is an era as well, Kay, where video nasties, films, which are now considered quite kind of late. Films that are less violent than, you know, what's the show we had an argument about yesterday?
The Last of Us was more
violent than the films that were banned. They were banned from being sold in shops because people were insane in this period. And they would blame the video nasties and music like heavy metal for satanic. It was all bullshit and people believed it because people are stupid. Anyway, that element of it.
Public service announcement from
that element of hysteria, which by the way has an exclamation mark in its title.
It does.
Just to kind of again allude to the
hysteria.
Fact. Hysteria! It's got a bit wacky, it's a little bit comedic, a little bit, and you know, but mainly trying to be horror-y, etc. I just thought it didn't knuckle down to like it had quite an eye-catching opening sequence, and then didn't really knuckle down to the kind of like who the villain is and what's happening, and why are people being murdered, and what's the connection to the heavy metal band, etc. And then it had bits that were very clear. Cliched like high school, you know, the stuff near the lockers in the high school. I was like, oh my god, we've seen this so many times. But we have, haven't we?
With the kind of Letterman jock bully,
of that. So I didn't like it that much. Sorry, I felt it was.
I didn't create it.
No, I know, but you. I'm surprised.
No, I thought it was entertaining compared to. Do you know what it was? I watched Hysteria straight after Murderbot,
right.
So I was just grateful.
Yeah, I thought. Yeah, as I say, I think it was a mess that I didn't hate it. I didn't dislike it. Quite good fun, but it didn't focus on anything, and I think that's what it stands
for. Just scene setting, I thought, the first episode.
Yeah, but these days you've got to get on with it.
You say that, Boyd. James is giving till episode 3 for Murderbot, so
won't be giving this till episode 3. Sorry.
Oh, really? Okay, what did you think?
But, so let's talk about the tone, because this is let's do that, because it is a coming of age kind of teen melodrama. It's also a comedy.
Yeah.
It's also a horror.
Yes. Mm.
And also something we haven't really touched on, it's fucking supernatural as well. Like, it's it's grounded. Mm. It's about the supernatural. Mm. There are very pronounced
it's like, what
and
if
clear.
These lunatics actually, what if there really was something for them to get worried about?
What if there actually is Satan
Which
and
is
devils
a
and stuff?
Cute
so,
idea.
Yeah, so there's a supernatural thread to this as well. It's really fucking hard to pin down like exactly what this is and what it's trying to be and how it's trying to work. And you're like, oh, you know, I'm quite enjoying the kind of the teen melodrama nonsense. And oh, that bit, was that funny? That might have been funny. I'm not sure. It was probably on a level with Murderbot, if I'm honest with you. And then the horror stuff. The horror stuff is interesting. The horror stuff is not hugely overt most of the time, but it has a nasty sort of undercurrent to it. And I don't know if you've ever seen Jonas Ackerlund's 2018 film Lords of Chaos.
Oh god, yeah.
Which is about the Norwegian black metal scene. One of the most upsetting films I've ever seen. Mm. I found that intensely upsetting and disturbing. And this really reminded me of that. It's just, it's really, really horrible. I don't even want to talk about the plot.
But it's like that with the kind of, not as horrible and not as powerful as a result.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, that's a very powerful film. Mm. Yeah, and it's, that's a film I can't even necessarily recommend because it's just, it traumatized me. But there's a bit here where like he's leaning into this idea of being satanic to such a point where you're like, is he going to sacrifice a cat? Is it like self-mutilation? There's all sorts of stuff. And it's like, it gets really quite nasty and unpleasant in a way
wouldn't it? Because it's about Satan.
Sure, but it's also a comedy. And it's just like, yeah. And it's again, it's that it's the tonal contortions there to go, oh, this is funny. And now I'm going to self-mutilate and harm an animal. And you're like, okay, hang on, what's happening? Mm. And I think I failed to fully adjust from one to the other. And I think actually the thread I had least issue with was the teen melodrama. The comedy wasn't super funny, but it was lighthearted. And the horror, I just thought, was too nasty to properly blend with the others. Now, to be fair, this has had reasonably positive reviews, and I think people have actually complimented how well they thought it had walked the line between these different tonalities and these different genres. Didn't really work for me, I've got to be honest.
No. Always
be honest.
Yes, indeed. And then, of course, there's a supernatural element, which comes in quite late in the day, and you're like, oh, okay, this is a whole other thing as well. Like, I don't fully understand. So yeah, it's a curiosity. So part of me almost says, like Murderbot, I almost think, like, if you have the opportunity and you've got the time, maybe watch an episode of both of them, because they are curios. Like, they're weird, they're unusual, yeah. They're not normal television, and they're not the kind of stuff we see regularly. So, you know, it might float your boat, but also as an intellectual exercise, maybe just, you know, watch them and see what you think.
Hmm.
Yeah, but you can tell why.
I can't endorse that.
No. Kay will not endorse that. She cannot sanction that buffoonery.
I'd say this one, but I wouldn't endorse like watching.
But you can sense why it didn't get renewed after a season, because it's all over the place.
It's all over the place, says Stevie's Boyd Hilton. And this airs on Paramount Plus, Boydie.
Friday, the 16th of May, 2025.
Friday, the 16th of May. Finishing off this trifecta of finally this week, we have The Game on Channel 5. And rather than being a wrestling biopic about Triple H, this is instead a serial killer show which may or may not see Robson Green as a notorious murderer, but definitely does see Jason Watkins as a retired copper who just can't let things go. Putting an entirely new spin on Neighbours from Hell, I would say. Let's hear about this from... Who wants to take it? Who wants to be my neighbour from hell?
Kay's enthralled to Big Watkins.
Oh, are you? Yes. Are you? You're in the pocket of Big Watkins.
Yeah.
I interviewed him.
So she's not allowed.
Don't remember the compliment about my delightful velvet jacket that you two slag off?
Right. Yeah. Okay, fine. Yes. Right. Kay cannot be trusted.
So he paid me compliments, so therefore I am now his greatest fan.
Yes. Boydie, as our bastion of integrity and objectivity.
Yeah. There's the real comedy.
Tell us about this prestige drama.
Oh God! I can sense already the hackles arising, the patronising anti-five agenda that you have is kicking into gear. But you know what?
Spoiler alert! I'd rather watch this than Murderbot.
Oh well, I mean, you're taking the words right out of my mouth.
Sorry.
Either Murderbot or Hysteria! Yeah. Exclamation mark. Do you know what? Initially, I was a little bit worried about this one because I think it has a little bit of a shaky start in terms of. He's retired on the day of Jason Watkins' character. As a policeman, he's retiring. He's a detective, he's retiring, and that felt like an old storyline that I'd seen before. That you begin a police thriller essentially with a cop on retirement day, but he can't let it go, a case go, and sure enough, he's got a case from his past that he can't let go. But then there was some wryly amusing. I mean, it's not trying to be funny, but I did find the observation that he once goes to the pub with his colleague, and he starts to think they've got a special surprise party for him, and there's no one there at all, and he walks in. And I have to say, Jason Watkins is great at that kind of stuff. Like, he's really good at playing an everyman who you recognise, who's not particularly special or, you know, or different anyway. He's just a kind of working detective. He's possibly fucked up on a big case, and possibly Robson Green's coming back to haunt him, who is the person who...
Or who may or may not
may
be.
May or may not be. We don't know. That's
the actual killer.
That is the mystery.
This is his new neighbour.
He's his new neighbour.
Who's a bit shifty. He's a bit shifty.
Yeah. And obviously, Jason Watkins' character is still obsessed with this case because he didn't solve it and people were killed and some people blame him. And there's a podcaster who's doing a true crime podcast, which was quite a clever little plot strand, who's slagging off the detective for failing to catch the killer. And I have to say that after that slightly shaky start, it was also quite shot in quite a kind of slightly basic way as well, the kind of non-cinematic way that James would assume a Channel 5 thriller was set. Then I thought once Robson Green arrived, basically, and started kind of getting into the life of Jason Watkins' character. And the two of them are kind of slowly getting to know each other. And Jason Watkins is going a bit bonkers because he thinks he might be the serial killer that he didn't catch. Then it really got going for me and I really started to enjoy it. And to the point where I watched the second episode and Jason Watkins is absolutely brilliant. He's great in everything, I have to say. He's great in this. And he has to deal with some quiet, you know, cheesy little moments every now and then. The script isn't exactly amazingly sophisticated. It's, you know, but it's not terrible either. It's just kind of like, you know, fine. But he sells it
elevated
all.
By his performance.
He absolutely elevated by his performance. And Robson Green, I have to say as well, he's excellent as well. So the two of them, particularly the scenes where they're kind of facing off against each other in the same room or they're literally, they are great. And I ended up really enjoying it. And it's easily by far the show of the week, spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. because it's very watchable.
I think I'll go with you on the script there. The script is fine, but it's very basic.
Yeah, it's not embarrassing. It's
borderline. Okay. I think you are absolutely right that if it, like Jason Watkins does an awful lot with very little, and there are moments of this where I was wincing a little bit. And Robson Green's character, he's written in very broad strokes at times, and some of the exchanges they have, I was a bit like, my cringe factor was quite high. I was like, this is just killing me. And it kind of, there were moments of this where this just kind of felt like a very kind of almost like cheap spoof of what you would get, like, you know, one of those classic like American serial killer dramas. Like it felt like this is one of those if your budget is like a packet of Walker's crisps. Like that's James. Kind of where this landed for me. And at the very beginning, which felt like sub Luther, that bit where he's like, you know, it's all the killer gets away and he says this catchphrase and he runs off and I was just like, oh my God, why are you making
the catchphrase
watch this?
Is really funny. The catchphrase is catch you later. And Sunetra Saku, who plays his wife, Jason Watkins, plays his wife, she got quite rightly so everyone says
that. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think you're right. Like, there are some good performances in here that, because there was a bit in this, I was like, oh my God, this is if Love Rat were a serial killer thriller, that's what this is. And early on, I was absolutely just like fuming that I was being forced to watch it. I won't say exactly that it won me over, but it did a bit. As it went on, I was like, I said, you know what? I said, this performance is actually pretty good. And it's fucking stupid and camp as hell. But I kind of was enjoying it by the end a little bit.
Yes.
And, you know, there's a bit like there's a suicide and is it a suicide? There's an awful lot of golf.
There is a lot of golf. Yeah.
And it's, I mean, it is. There were parts of this where I was genuinely like, this also seems to have a touch of like it's dipping its toe in the waters of comedy, where it's like, I think...
When he enters the empty pub,
But also a couple of bits, there was a bit like, and I couldn't decide whether I was charitably saying it's trying to be funny or it was just...
I think it's... I think it's knowing.
But I'm giving it the benefit out. I do think it was trying to be funny. And I think it succeeded. I think it genuinely is funny. But I think, you know, I wasn't sure if I was laughing at it or with it at times, but maybe it was with it. So all in all, while I am a little snooty about it, it's a lot better than I thought
snooty,
it was.
That's your nickname.
Yeah.
It'd be weird if you weren't a little bit snooty. I enjoy the cat and mouse-ness of it all, and I think the performances definitely elevate it. And the idea of that, like, he has got the everyman quality about him, Jason Watkins, and the idea that he is slowly being driven mad by this case that he can't solve and that is making him, you know, cross lines that he wouldn't ordinarily and jeopardize both his home life and professional reputation. I bought into it. I believed him.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. And, you know, there is a bit where, I mean, he sounds like a crazy person. Like when he's saying this stuff,
he
sounds deranged.
Why are you doing that? Because he's got so fixated on this notion that Robson Green.
And he's coming off the back of a breakdown. Like this thing has caused him to have a breakdown, which I think we understand is why he's taken early retirement, that he's just not in a good place. And then it feels like, from his point of view, oh my God, I've retired and now the killer is coming into my life, and everyone around him is just like, you've just gone around the bend, mate.
It's like, let it go.
You've absolutely cracked. Play golf, what are you doing? You're saying that your neighbour is a serial killer because he said, catch you later. What are you like?
Yeah.
And I like the fact that his wife has called him out on that. I think it's a good moment. Mm. But yeah, Channel 5 then, The Game.
Yeah, stripped across the week, Monday to Thursday, 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th of May, 9 o'clock, 2025.
Very good. What else have we missed this week, Boydie?
Well, coming up on Sunday of this week, at the end of our week, and we didn't ignore these. It's just that they were embargoed. So maybe we'll come back to them. But there's the bombing of Pan Am 103.
Yes, there is.
Which is about the Lockerbie incident. Yep. And that's on BBC One. There was a dramatisation of that on Sky earlier this year, which focused on a particular parent, I think, of a victim of that incident. This is, I think, a more general look at the whole case and the investigation and the Americans investigating with the British, et cetera, et cetera. That's on BBC One.
Connor Swindells is in it.
And it's a Netflix UK copy. I think it's quite a big event kind of thing. And that starts on Sunday and runs on Monday as well. And then there is a big show on ITV, Code of Silence. This is Rose Ailing Ennis. You may have seen the trailers for this if you watch actual live TV these days, which obviously James doesn't, but other people do. The ITV are really backing this because it's a big starring role for her. And she plays a deaf woman who's called on by police, including Charlotte Ritchie from You. Mm. And I asked her about this in our interview with her, and we talked about it towards the end. Charlotte Ritchie plays a cop who gets Rose Ailing Ellis's character to do lip reading for them for the criminal gang they're investigating. And Rose Ailing Ellis takes on this role of lip reader for the police, but then gets too involved. And I'll just leave it there. And I've watched some of this.
I'm excited to see Charlotte Ritchie in a copper role.
Yeah, she's great. Yeah, well, I was about to review it there. Stop myself, like I have to stop you sometimes, Kay. But that's on Sunday and Monday as well. So it's a slightly unfortunate clash of two big set piece event dramas on BBC.
But one of those we'll probably do on Pilot Plus, won't we?
Yes.
Exactly. Oh, I thought you meant for listeners. I was like, well, people can record stuff, boy. Don't be too preoccupied.
Oh, no, I know. But you're still, you know, been two big shows.
Even that, people can record stuff. That seemed very like 2003, didn't it?
Yeah, I know. I still pine about life.
I still today, record I things on the old VCR.
Yes, exactly.
On Sky.
Also on seven new episodes of Abba Elementary, Kay's favourite. Mm-hmm. Starts on Wednesday on Disney Plus.
Elspeth season two comes back, to Witness exactly. on Monday.
Correct.
Love, Death and Robots, which I can't believe this. It's on season four.
Oh, Jesus.
So I didn't even know there'd been four seasons of this, but there's a fourth season of Love, Death and Robots comes to Netflix on Thursday as well.
I've got PTSD from the word robot now, so like I've often murdered myself.
Is that still except produced by David Fincher, I think?
I can only assume it's him and Tim Miller.
Yeah, I think it is. And there is a show which annoyingly I didn't find out about until too late, which would have been a contender. To do, he says, flicking through his magazine. Sorry, here we go.
Everyone likes the Russell.
Yeah, it's got Prime Video. I've got Overcompensating, which starts on Thursday the 15th, which is a coming of age comedy created by social media comedian Benito Skinner, who plays a closeted former gridiron player and homecoming king who befriends a high school outsider in a bid to fit in. So that's quite sounds quite interesting, but I didn't really know about until too late.
What's a gridiron player?
American football.
Oh.
Yeah, so he's a gay athlete, basically. That looks interesting. Prime Video. Comedy.
What is our pick of the week?
The game.
The game.
For me, it is, unfortunately, I'm sorry to say, it is Murderbot.
No!
It is Murderbot.
Bullshit.
Oh,
well, I watched four episodes of Murderbot. Mm. I made it through one episode of the game. I don't know what to tell you.
Okay. Fine.
Mm. Also, I kind of feel like it would be so off-brand of me to choose a Channel 5 show as my pick of the week.
It would show that you were being open-minded.
It would show that, and of course, we don't want to lie to our listeners.
No. He's hermetically sealed up top.
We don't want to mislead our cherished listeners. No.
Oh, God, fantastic. Well, that's it. That is it for the show. We do hope you enjoyed it. If you did, do leave us a 5 Murderbot rating.
Rating.
A 5 Murderbot rating.
You've got very mid-Atlantic.
I don't know what's happening there. A rating. Leave us a rating on either Spotify or Apple Podcasts or Pocket Casts, which is what I use for my podcast, but you can use you can drop them on any way you like, really. Just leave us a rating and it has to be 5 stars.
Yes.
What else? And please do subscribe to Pilot Plus so you can listen to our ongoing Last of Us chats and prepare yourself for the big Last of Us special, spoiler special, which is going to come at the end of that show's run. What else is happening? Obviously, we will be back in your ears next week, and I have no clue what we're going to be talking about. There's not a great deal on. 9 Perfect Strangers does return, that is true, to Prime for its second season. There's a show called Rematch on Disney Plus. I don't know what we're going to be covering.
That's about chess, by the way.
That's about chess. Yeah. So perhaps a Queen's Gambit type affair there. And also, Rian Johnson is going to be on next week's podcast talking about Poker Face.
Oh, that's exciting.
Fun.
That's right.
Little Disasters, which is a thing that Kay's doing.
Is that next week?
Yes, next week.
What day is it next week? I will live add it to the calendar.
There's a thing called Sirens on Netflix as well, which I think will be heavily embargoed. That's with Julianne Moore. Yeah. We'll find something.
Yeah, no, no, none of these are in the calendar, Boydie. Just put that out. None of them.
Well, I'm a busy man.
Castigated. Yeah.
Okay.
Just duly admonished.
Duly admonished. Yeah, right.
I apologise.
Who's Julie?
Was this particular episode of the podcast comedy? Was it horror? Was it sci-fi?
Oh, my God.
Was it supernatural? Was it teen angst? I do not know.
It wasn't funny,
know.
But it was.
Let's just say
it was more amusing
let's
than Murderbot.
Just say it would have been called Tonal Shifts as yeah, the title yeah. on the Apple podcast.
Yeah, like many things this week, tried to be funny, didn't quite succeed.
Yeah,
Pilot's out.